This allows us to be proactive in our lives and not be reactive to everything, because when you're reactive, you're not in charge.
Just be willing to take the smallest first step, and it can impact major change in our lives.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the ADHD Eavesdrop, where you can be a butterfly on the wall and listen in on my conversations. Today, we have Jen Kreiner back with us from Stones Throw Coaching out in Montana. And as always, her details are down below in our detail information. If last time I talked to Jen, we talked about space, we're going to go to a higher level on how we can use it. We're going to talk about evaluating your capacity, inviting learning and acceptance and skill building into your life on a daily basis, accepting and learning from your ebbs and your flows and how to deal with those, and basically just curating a life with intention, including restorative practices. So it is awesome to have you back again, Jen. Welcome.
Thanks, Janine. I'm totally excited to be here and appreciate the invitation back on your podcast.
So, Jen, last time you were here, we had a great conversation about space and using that time and space in our lives to emotionally regulate ourselves and things. And we touched a little bit on some more intentional reflection time and space usage. I think today we should dive in deeper because space is. It's a pretty big place. I really want to explore, like, what are the possibilities of the changes that you could maybe make in your life, the improvements that you could make building that space in intentionally and then using it intentionally. You are my space queen, so you're the person to talk to about this. So let's dive in a little bit more about those possibilities.
Well, I love being called a space queen. That seems to really hit for some reason. I will take it. To expand on where we were at on our first visit, in that we focused a lot on that pause. So, what tools can we implement in that pause in order to respond versus react when it comes to emotional regulation, which is foundational for so many individuals impacted by ADHD?
I'm going to break in right
Sure.
here and I'm going to say, if you did not listen to our last podcast, I would suggest you go back and listen to that one before you listen to this one, because there's a lot of base kind of information in there, and it was pretty awesome too. So.
Agreed. Yes, but we noted towards the end, like, oh, we could really go on from here and discuss more about how inviting space into our lives can bring about so much self-awareness and opportunity to make changes in our lives. And personally, what I have seen is typical for us and for a lot of people that I work with, is that it's a kind of go, go, go mentality, and then kind of shut down at the end of the day. And that just becomes like a cycle. So space isn't really something that we build into our day. It actually is something that's very uncomfortable. So regardless of what is coming up in those moments, it's often emotions that we don't want to feel, know are there, and that we're avoiding them. And even often it's in positive moments or ways to acknowledge our wins, acknowledge our successes. Even that is sometimes uncomfortable as well. And so, with a practice of understanding how to evaluate your capacity and build in more space, so much is possible.
Now, you just said something really key right there in evaluating your capacity.
Yes.
Now, I know you can use space to build your capacity, but you use your space differently depending upon your capacity, right?
Yes, and I would say often we are not the priority, period. And so if there is time, that time isn't necessarily given to yourself. And learning to evaluate your capacity and delete things that are potentially non-essential at this season in your life enables you to have more time to give to yourself in learning, awareness, reflection, self-care in terms of what is restorative to you and what's restorative to your nervous system. And yeah, I would say typically what is accompanying individuals who put themselves or prioritize activities and time for themselves is a feeling of guilt or being selfish. And in the work of coaching, we work with clients to help them understand how that is a narrative that was handed to them. And often it's one that needs to be undone in order to move forward.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I can see like the idea of, first of all, making time for yourself, you know, because like it seems like we're always at the bottom of the priority list. But not just making the time for ourselves, but just kind of sitting there and thinking, or, you know, maybe writing some things down, but not actively doing something also kind of gives me a little feeling of anxiety, like using that space. I'm sitting here and it doesn't look like I'm doing anything, but I'm doing it in my head. So am I worried about looking like I'm doing something, or am I able to see this as an activity, as an activity, like rather than just sitting there and using your space, this is an activity in a way. It doesn't matter what I look like, right? Because I'm not trying to impress anybody else. I'm not doing this for anybody else. I'm not hoping that my husband will look at me and say, oh, it looks like she's doing something, right? Having that mental capacity to just say that sitting here and thinking and using my space is doing something. It's just not physical action.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that thought that you're having is that somebody else isn't seeing me do something. And so often that is the case is that if I am participating in something that looks like stillness, or ultimately just not achieving something, that where did that come from and what is that internal message? That I have to be doing, producing, achieving, in order to have worth.
Absolutely. And when I talk to a lot of clients, the worth comes from without a lot of times. And so I think that when we talk about space and using that space and being comfortable using that space, it also has to stem from the fact that you realize that you are worthy of dedicating that space to yourself and that it doesn't matter. You don't need your worth from outside, your worth is inside. And so when you dive into that, and that kind of just demolishes that roadblock, right? Because it's like this has nothing to do with what I look like. But I think a lot of people still feel like I have to look productive. You know, I'm trying to, oh, like say you work at Meijer, right? Or at a grocery store somewhere, right? And you've pretty much done everything you need to do, but you need to look busy.
Right.
And I think that is one of, I think it's a barrier to people using that space because you're used to looking busy.
Yeah. And it's when you invite that space in, it's curating, you know, like very carefully deciding how it best suits you and for what needs you have right now. And so the way that I have seen the possibilities be very fruitful is in the opportunity of learning about ADHD and that education where this is how my brain works, that I am able to then accept it because what we resist will constantly persist and we will stay stuck there. So as a foundation, inviting that level of understanding, which can then bring self-compassion and grace, which are all a part of this this journey for our clients in coaching as they start to make small changes that have big impacts in their lives.
In your logo, you have the stone's throw and you have the ripples that come out from the stone. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about how this can start that ripple effect.
We can choose the smallest step, just be willing to take the smallest first step, and it can impact major change in our lives. And so understanding how that worked for me, and in building a brand around that to reflect that, that just that stone's throw, makes a lot of sense to me. So, ADHD support, a life of intention, all of those things are just a stone's throw away.
I love that. And I'm starting to see like how this cycle, I feel like you need to use space to reach the point where you're ready to use space because you have different levels of using that space, right? So when you're first starting out, you're just learning how to sit in that space, right? And then after a while, after you get to know yourself and you've been doing coaching, you've been doing all this work, like doing the research and all that, then you go to a different level of space. And that is the level that I'd really like to talk about today is what can we do at that level with space in our lives?
Yeah, I think the that acceptance piece is a big one, and a part of that is the idea of the ebb and flow. There's no possible way that the human experience is going to allow you to constantly be on a linear path of high productivity, high energy, and positive mood. That's just not realistic. So when I think about a good or bad day, or how I used to think about a good or bad day, I now think of my days in ebb and flow terms. Like, was I flowing today? It was just natural, easy, being able to do the things, or was it an ebb? And often people feel like when they're in ebb, they should be able to be high energy. They should be achieving this level of joy, happiness, good feelings. But what if it's okay to just honor ourselves in the ebb? I can honor my productivity. I can honor that I feel good when I'm flowing. What does that look like if I build in acceptance to honor that ebb? And as a human, what do I need? So then again, it's turning inward when you have that experience to know, what do I need right now? What support do I need? What would be restorative for me, as opposed to spiraling out that I shouldn't feel this way?
I'm thinking about when you're in that space. We've talked about a lot about space and how to use it, but I think probably a lot of people are still like, I don't totally understand what we're doing while we're using this space. What does it look like to use that space?
I think, to take note, say you're at work and you're spinning your wheels, and what should be happening isn't happening. It's been an unproductive day. And that kind of internal narrative starts to attack and criticize. And what that ultimately is doing is just that mental rumination drains us physically. So instead of going to that place is having that self-awareness that this is happening. I'm starting to talk to myself this way, but I'm just in an ebb right now. So what do I need to feel restorative? And then that goes to a conversation about what is rest? What does true rest mean? And true rest is any restorative practice that is going to be different for everybody, any individual. It's almost like going through, what is in the past or currently works for you to expend limited energy in an activity that you truly are enjoying. So it's not necessarily sleep. It could be a nap, but it's not necessarily sleep. But for ADHDers who are hyperactive, like we don't, our bodies don't really want to stop. It could be in that moment at work, I can make a choice. I can sit here and beat myself up and pressure myself into working, which we know that that just increases procrastination and we won't do anything. Or I can honor that ebb state and recognize that I just want to go take a 10-minute walk around a couple blocks and get some blood flowing and have maybe just like a walking state of meditation that is not, intentionally not telling me that I should be back at my desk. I should be doing this. I need to get started on this. All of those thoughts are going to drain us mentally. All those mental thoughts are going to drain us physically. And so that is an option. And a cup of tea. You know, it's going to be different for everybody, and what it's almost like a DOPA menu in that moment, having a list of things that you've come up with that makes sense for you to feel kind of like rebounded. I know we were talking about artistic outlets. Perhaps you take a half an hour to recognize that it's okay to have flexibility within your day to drip in something that isn't achieving. But you, it puts you more in a state of being than doing.
So I have an example of a time that I used my space. I usually made a video about it, but it kind of brings out like how you can use that right in that moment. It didn't take long, but I did stop and use the space because I was spinning out of control. I was like, I had all these things that I needed to get done in the next 10 minutes, and I was going willy-nilly all over the place. And honestly, I thought of you and I thought, use your space, Janine, use your space. And so I stopped and I, like had a conversation with myself, some good self-talk. I said, okay, what's happening here? I need to slow down and look at what I need to do. Am I doing it in the best way I possibly can? Actually, I'm slowing myself down because I'm running around willy-nilly and I'm not being as productive and as quick as I could be. Just taking that and then reflecting on that, right? And saying, okay, this is where I'm at. I was able to slow myself down, get myself centered again. And what I see in using space is what is oftentimes wrong in our society is that everybody's reactive, right? And with the using the space intentionally like that, I became proactive. I went from being a victim of my circumstance in this moment to being the person who was in charge of that moment.
Love that. Yeah. Just taking into your hands what you can control when things are seemingly spinning out of control. And often those anxious thoughts are going to land in a spot that is not within our control. And so that is a beautiful way to also understand that often there is like an emotional component to when we find ourselves dipped into that ebb. And to give attention and acknowledge. And even if it's not in the moment of when something happened, those experiences can be cumulative. They are cumulative. And so, let's say in the workplace, you have 2 to 3 interactions during the day, an email that you sensed a tone from somebody, an interaction with a colleague where you didn't set a boundary on your time, and then they just talked at you at the water cooler, way past the amount of time you had to give to them. Your boss gives you feedback that doesn't necessarily land very well. So all of these experiences are cumulative, and if you don't give yourself those moments after they happen, just kind of like the push it aside, brush it under the rug. In that space, when you are finding that you're in that ebb, is to go back and give attention to that accumulating, like stress levels on your nervous system. Because if you don't take the time to go for a walk, do some breathing exercises, journal, if you have a home office, pet your dog, then you're gonna, get into like the afterwork time period where you're interacting with loved ones, and the smallest thing will set you off. And it's because that cumulative stress throughout the day was not honored.
It's intense to think about, like you get a little drop of acid and then you use your space and you neutralize the acid and then you get another drop. But if you don't neutralize the acid after every drop, you've got this big mess of acid that is now eating through.
Yeah, that's a great dark, scary metaphor.
But that's what this is what was in my head. I was like envisioning, yes, because it is just like you have to take the time to address it throughout the day, or by the end of the day, what do we all end up doing? Verbally vomiting and complaining to somebody else about how horrible a day we had, not being our best versions of ourselves. There's so many negative things that I can see from not taking that space. That it's hard to deny the positives that go with it.
Yeah, and that's a great point. It's like an opportunity to validate to yourself that those experiences were hard. That would be hard for anybody. That doesn't feel good. And then you can give yourself compassion. So then you're not constantly looking to take validation from an external source. But in terms of metaphors, I always share with clients that I feel like it's like every stress incident is like a scoop of baking soda into our plaster of Paris volcano that we made in fifth grade. And so if I just keep putting scoop after scoop of baking soda in all day without giving any attention to removing it, when I get home and my child or my partner or the friend, whatever happens, the slightest drop of vinegar being the next stress impact will make an eruption. And so, in that really conscious space of, setting a timer at work, maybe it's like every 2 hours, you're giving attention to a practice that works for you, because it's going to be different for everybody, to kind of take some time to go inward and be with yourself, be with what's there, and employ restful measures in drips throughout the day, so that what happens is you don't go, 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 get home, and then just go into kind of like a shutdown paralysis burnout mode, where you have not much left to share.
So within that space, you're giving yourself permission
Yes.
to rest and reflect on yourself and have good conversations with yourself. One thing I kind of do want to point out is that reflective space is not a space for us to beat ourselves up in.
Agreed. And at the same time, I would take note of the voice that we're hearing. What is the critic saying to you? Because it's important as a part of our awareness to reconcile who that is, where that voice is coming from. And is it true? Do I believe that? Do I concede to that being true about me? And in terms of entering in to agreements with myself, like, what is the voice that I want to agree to hear?
And it sounds to me like a big part of that is being able to step back and almost being an observer of what's happening at that time, right? That also kind of separates you from that emotion because you're just like, what is happening? Give me the facts. How am I feeling? Give me the facts, and being able to not pass judgment. So like you said, you'd recognize, yes, I recognize that this negative thing is here. It is here in my space. But instead of being like, it's horrible, you're curious. Why? Why is it here? What's underneath it? And how do I get around it?
Yes, totally. And it's a process of reconnecting with your authentic self-concept, because whatever that inner critic is telling you is an accumulated version of you from the context of your family system, your school experience, potentially if you're a late in lifer, you're or unmanaged in your adult professional sphere. And those are just messages that have been given to you. So do you agree to them?
Yeah.
It is a decision that we get to make, but it is work to be in full awareness of how and when they come up. In that space of the inner critic, we are our own advocate to nurture what we believe about ourselves. And so that is where, you potentially could, if it's a character, if that inner critic becomes a character of some kind, you can give it a name, you can draw it, it's tangible, it's real, you can tell a story about it. And then who is your protector? Who is the one that is nurturing and overriding that inner critic and that voice?
Yes, you're writing your own story. And this also brings me to the point at which we have to challenge ourselves because we're in the higher level space right now. Now we're not just being comfortable in our space. Now we're just like, okay, we've got to use our space. And being able to look at something and say a situation at work and say, was that, how dare he say something like that to me? And when you're thinking about it and you're thinking, I have every right to be mad, how do you take that a step further and say, is there any truth in what they said? Let's go deeper. Yes, he shouldn't have said it. He shouldn't have said it that way. But is there any truth in that? Is there something in there, a nugget of something that I might be able to use? And being able to challenge yourself and just not stop at I'm pissed and I deserve to be pissed because it was a rotten thing to say. But then going deeper and asking yourself questions like, what could I have done to respond differently? Is there any truth in the statement? Is there something there that I could work on? And being able to step back and from the emotion of anger and really examine the situation.
Yeah, and I mean, if there are just mean people, that's a challenge for sure in itself, but it goes back to skill building. So that is also something in the space that you can do is build skills to set boundaries in terms of how you respond to treatment of you. How do you allow your boundaries are teaching people how to treat you.
Boundaries are teaching people how to love you better.
Yeah. Well, and it's a protective measure, and not everybody around us is safe.
No, and not everybody wants to love you either, but I'm going to give them every opportunity to love me the way that I want to be loved.
You're very lovable, Janine. So, but that's where I would put my energy as, again, like you said, find the evidence and harness what is in your control. And so understanding how to advocate for yourself in a personal or professional situation is a big one. And that also enables you to determine, again, I love the word curate, like you're getting to decide who gets what from you. And so the skill of setting boundaries really does enhance your capacity.
Again, proactive. And I keep hearing it over and over without us saying it, is this allows us to be proactive in our lives and not be reactive to everything. Because when you're reactive, you're not in charge. So by not using that space and just running around willy-nilly and not like really reflecting and doing these things, we just continue to react and react and react. And everything is being done to us rather than us dealing with what's around us in a way that's healthy.
Yeah, we lose the intentionality.
So how often do you like schedule in space for yourself?
I would, and again, on a just personal, relatable level, it took a lot of work to allow flexibility throughout the daytime where it does not feel like a guilt-inducing activity to choose from my menu and do something, as well as create a flexible schedule. And that's the thing about neurodivergent individuals need flexibility in their work schedule. We don't all kind of run on the same circadian rhythm. So if I know that there's 2 hours in the middle of my day where it's pointless to even be doing something connected to my goals for work, why spin out and spend the time blankly, staring or, wasting scrolling time, all the things where you're just, it's an easy fallback, getting distracted, losing focus. Like it just starts to, all of our symptoms tend to become exacerbated in that ebb. So what do I need instead? What makes sense for me to give to myself? What gift can I give to myself? So I would say, that I have a pretty strong practice of starting my day off with things that fill my bucket and, making sure that I'm covering my basic needs. It's a lot of work to maintain a routine around basic needs like sleep, nutrition, getting outside. I try to be physical, but I do it in a way that is fun for me, not forced. And so I would say I kind of sandwich my day with things that fill my bucket. And then in the middle of it, I allow for 20 minutes here and there to go do something, or sometimes a 2 hour block where I'm choosing, I'm just going to give it in the context of family, is that if my daughter comes home from school in the middle of my work day, I would rather take that 2 hours to have, which I believe connection is a part of rest, easy connection to spend time with my daughter before my last few hours of work in the day. And it has made a huge difference.
So When you talk about using that, because it's restful, it's regenerative for you. When you're spending time with your daughter, and the only reason I ask you this is because I know a lot of times people get really hung up on defining what exactly they're looking at. And so, would you define that as using your space, that time that you spend with your daughter?
Absolutely. Yep. I step away from everything that is, potentially feeling like pressure, and I give myself a snack. We have a snack together. We talk about what's been going on. We play ping pong. It's easy. It should be easy and restorative. It
Okay,
doesn't have to
so
be laying down.
well, we've talked a lot about like using it to really reflect on what's happening in our lives and move our lives forward, but now I feel like we're in a whole different realm also with you don't actually have to be sitting and reflecting during that time, but you are still filling yourself during that time.
Yeah, I think in the initial evaluation of capacity and building in space is what you're doing is learning about yourself and what you need. And so a part of learning about what you need is learning how you define restorative practices for yourself and then inviting into that space that you've created those restorative practices.
I think you kind of narrowed it down when you said it's work. It's not like we're gonna. I scheduled 10 minutes into my day to sit and think. That's probably not going to get us as many results as maybe some of the other things that we're talking about, like using that space to rejuvenate ourselves and unfocus from the stress in our life, right? And focus on how to build ourselves.
Yeah, but I think we can't ignore stress. And so, and maybe that's an attachment or a link or something is like a list of ideas for 10-minute drips of space into your day. And so, when it's related to stress, you can do breathing practices. Quick breathing practices really allows us to not have to articulate something, but it's just moving that energy out. That has accumulated in our bodies. A thought download when we're spinning out and ruminating and overwhelmed, sometimes we need to get the clutter down. And so a thought dump or a thought download is something, it's not like journaling, it's just you're an uncensored version of what's happening in your brain. Because eventually it's going to take you somewhere that you see like, oh, I'm feeling this. And then you can sit with that feeling and surf it, which we talked about in the last podcast. But to actually, instead of resist these challenging emotions, is spend time in the space, knowing it's going to be uncomfortable to confront things that we typically never have.
And I know that I build it in my day. It's not like I put a timer or anything. And some people maybe would need to just to remember to do it. But throughout my day, like if I get off a meeting, when I get off a meeting, I generally take a few minutes to just sit and breathe, process what happened in the meeting, check where I am right now. And I think that's really important is like that check in and how am I feeling? Is my dopamine where it needs to be? Or do I need to give myself a dopamine hit before I continue with my day? Do I need to pour into my cup before I continue to pour out? And so oftentimes I'll be like, you know what? I need to get up. I need to get up and walk around, or I need to go do something else, go outside. A lot of times I'll go outside, just walk down the driveway and walk back. But I'm not where I would like myself to be right now. So what do I need to do to get there so that I have a better afternoon or a better, whatever?
Yeah, and I like that point about, routine is important. We often will hold a routine for a while and then let it go and then question ourselves about why we let it go. And it's, if we learn about our brains, we need novelty. So while we like structure and structure is supportive to us, we need things to be a little different. So that idea of within your habits, habit stacking, connecting something that you know you do every day with like you said, the menu, what do I need right now? And so it's going to be a novel addition, but it's always stacked together with something that's automatically happening in your day.
Yeah. And then it takes you to a new dimension because, again, you put yourself back in control rather than being, I'm overwhelmed, I'm sad, I'm just, this is the way I feel, and I'm going to sit in this. Okay, but let's take it a step further and use the space to figure out what we can do to maybe bring us out of the ebb a little bit, or to be comfortable being in the ebb while we're there.
Yeah, I think often the feelings that come with being in the ebb, the self-talk that comes with being in the ebb, we create a problem where there's actually not a problem. It's a natural state of being, and we make it a problem.
Yeah, because everybody has these emotions. It's a natural thing, right?
Yeah, and just to again, self-monitoring is not an executive function that naturally works for us. So self-awareness, being able to see what happened and then make changes based on future outcomes that we want. That's a skill that we have to build. So being able to see patterns, did something potentially cause this dip in energy or strong set of overwhelm and emotion? And being able to look back to see, am I, creating in some unuseful pattern this intensity of a dip?
And that's where that whole other level of challenging yourself comes in.
Yes.
So, Jen, I feel like we've kind of talked like about a lot of things. Is there anything you would like to add? Because I swear we could talk about it forever.
I think that the most important takeaway for anybody who's just starting to invite management practices into their life. Because pills don't build skills. So even if we're able to medicate, we can mitigate some things happening, but ultimately it's about skill building and introducing what works for our lives. So I would just offer that always staying with your own journey and reducing comparisons to other people's experience and where they're at is a big one, to just stay present and meet yourself right where you are. And know that the smallest, tiniest step is the only step that needs to be focused on.
That's beautiful. I love that.
We are impatient, right? We want the outcome. We want it all to be different, better now.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and I'm just thinking about, I just want to point out that in talking about this and in starting to, really use these techniques and these methods, the treadmill has slowed down, because if you get caught on that treadmill and you're just running, 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 and you never take that space, you will never stop running. But you get caught up in that running mode. And I have realized that I am not running as hard in my life as I used to, because instead of just continuing to run from whatever's happening, I'm stopping and I'm saying, what is happening? And how do we deal with this? So the proactive versus the reactive just keeps coming back to me over and over again.
Yeah, and I would be curious about how you choose to show up in that mode of slowing down, how that has impacted you.
How many times have you been like, I'm upset, I'm, like, I'm just so angry and everything, and people are just like, yeah, you have every right to be and all that other stuff. And then later on, you look back at the situation and you say, why was I so angry? Right. And that has been a really big one for me, as far as like, yeah, you validate your each other's friends, but if you are validated in that, and then you just roll with it. And I don't reflect. And I'm speaking of a situation where I was very upset with somebody about something they said, and everybody's like, yeah, they shouldn't have said that, right? I rolled with it. But then later on, I took the reflective space and I looked at the situation and I said, why was I so angry about this? Not, all the other people involved, saying yes, just kind of like fed it. But why am I really angry? And what it came down to is I was angry with myself because I hadn't set the boundary that said that you can't talk to me that way. And I really came down to, I need to set a boundary. This is what I need to do here. And I'm upset with myself because I let that person talk to me that way. And that's why I'm so mad. But if I hadn't taken the time to go back and look at the situation, I would have just continued to be angry and fester in that anger, and never really look at the situation in a way that might be productive to me.
Yeah, it just be our emotions become projections often. Yeah, that's a beautiful realization and reflection. And I would say even in this work and repetition around this work and creating new neural pathways that help us use the tools that we learn, we often are still emotional individuals. And it's giving ourselves grace that when we do have a reaction that is not ideal, that we still know we can go into that space of reflection in the near term. Like you said, to identify actually what caused that and what do I need.
Yeah, because I knew that my emotion seemed really strong for the situation, and so I knew there was something else under there. And you learn to identify that and recognize that in yourself by using space as a habitual thing, doing it all the time. You start to recognize your own patterns and you're like, I need to look back at this situation again because my response was not in line with what happened.
Yeah, lovely.
So, Jen, I love talking to you every time you come on. It's always so much fun. And of course, I at this point always say, I hope you'll come back, and you nod and say yes.
Yes, thank you for the invitation. I would love to visit again anytime.
Thank you again. And if everybody, all my butterflies on the wall who are listening in on our conversation, if you like what you're hearing, if you like our content, Jen, what should they do?
They should absolutely hit that like and subscribe button.
You betcha. And we'll see you next time.